Bible reading is taken from St. John's Gospel, chapter 11, verses 31 to 46. It's in the booklet, life booklet in front of you. Page 58, please. Reading. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in the spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he's been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you, for you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you have sent me." When he said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The man who died came out, his hands and foot bound. His hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done.
Hello. I'm going to share a few thoughts from those verses. It's going to be a shorter sermon than normal. I'm scared about the sound. Good. I'm going to share some words in these verses. It'll be a shorter sermon than normal if you're thinking, normally it's 25 minutes and looking at the clock. I wanted to give due space for the interview because we've come partly to hear Lara's story. But this passage really does tie in with this very closely. And so please have a look at it. I'm sorry that I've just realised that the translation here and the translation here are not quite the same. Either is fine. I mean, they're both just good translations in modern English of a document originally written in Greek. So John was an eyewitness of the life of Jesus. He was a fisherman along with his brother. And then he wrote down the extraordinary things that he witnessed. And then a 2,000-year-old document now translated into English in two different ways. Take your pick. I think I'll go for this one just for simplicity. But these are yours to take away. And we'd love you to have part of the Bible for yourself. They're free to take. Maybe this makes you curious enough to want to read more. And I'd love that. So take it away and have a look. I've chosen an episode in the life of Jesus, which is kind of similarly tragic. I guess bereavement is one of the hardest things, isn't it? Last week I preached at a funeral of a friend I've known for 30 years. And it's a really hard thing, let alone to lose a husband or someone close to you. Jesus has just lost somebody close to him. It's a man called Lazarus. And Jesus was friends with Lazarus and his two sisters, Mary and Martha. And he's just gone to just after Lazarus has died, to comfort them. So he arrives, and it makes me think, just hearing Lara's story, you know, what would you have said to Lara if you were one of her, you know, the paramedic who lives next door, or the friends from church who were there with the GP, or the church family gathered around? You know, what do you say in that moment to somebody? And I think the thing about suffering is it does make us sort of stress test our view of the world. I think lots of people, we kind of go through life without really asking the questions of, what are my foundations? What am I building my life on? Because when life's easy, you know, you just enjoy it, don't you? You enjoy studying on a course you enjoy at university, playing fantastic music. Lots of your music students or musical theatre students, you enjoy that. Or if you're enjoying your work, or you're enjoying parenthood, some of you, or, you know, it's just fun. You don't need to ask the questions. But when things go really wrong for you or for people that you love, what answers do you have? What do you say to somebody who's just lost somebody? And, well, people say to Jesus, verse 32, Jesus, where were you? You see that, verse 32? When Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. So that they've seen Jesus have extraordinary power already and do amazing things like walk on water, which you can't ordinarily do. If that's a problem for you, then I referred to you to last week's interview at Camden Water, where we had a professor of science asking those kind of questions. How can you walk on water? And the answer is you can't. But if you made the world, you probably can, as in Jesus can just adjust the laws of physics and biology. They've seen him do that. They've seen him open the eyes of a man born blind, and then suddenly Jesus just spits on some mud and mixes a paste and puts it on his eyes, and he can see. And this is extraordinary. And that they know he's got power. And the question isn't, Jesus, are you powerful? The question is, Jesus, you are powerful, so why didn't you do something? You know, where were you? Why wouldn't a powerful God have kept me from this suffering? And they ask this. These are his friends. If you're a Christian, you're allowed to speak to God frankly. God, why has this happened? So they say to Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Where were you, Jesus? Verse 33, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. I love this. If you want to know what God's like, I mean, all sorts of guesses, aren't there, in the world about the ultimate reality? But if you really want to know what God is like, then look at what he did when he came to earth in person. That's the amazing thing about the Christian message, that you can know for sure. It's 2,000 years ago, God showed up in the person of Jesus. And so you ask, what is Jesus like? And if I know what Jesus is like, I know what God's like, because this is God introducing himself. What's God like? He's not serene and distanced and unmoved. Do you expect God just sort of float through life? As I remember when I was growing up, and Jesus in religious art, which I find very problematic usually, he always has this sort of expression of slightly smiling but looking like he's in a bit of a dream world. I don't like that depiction of Jesus. I don't think he's like that here, is he? Like in the actual eyewitness document of Jesus isn't serene, distant, unmoved Jesus. It's very troubled Jesus, disturbed and upset Jesus. Because he has compassion on it. He is at the graveside of somebody he loved, in the company of the man's sisters, who he also loved, and he's very upset. For me, at funerals, by the way, that's the thing that gets me. Like, I can normally hold it together until I see the person that's closest to the person who's died. And then I see how upset they are, and then it upsets me, if you've had that experience. You kind of get, it's like grief is contagious, and it kind of spreads. Jesus catches it. And verse 35, the shortest verse in the Bible, if you want to know for a pub quiz. But it's not just for a pub quiz, is it? It's also a very poignant verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. So the first thing I want us to notice is that God, as he really is, as he showed up in the world, cares. He's bothered by it. He sees suffering, and it disturbs him. And then they ask this question, verse 37, but why didn't he do something about it then? Couldn't he who opened the eyes of the blind man kept this man from dying? And that is one of the puzzles, isn't it, about suffering. Like, surely if God were powerful, he could stop this. You know, he could stop Johnny getting ill. Or he could have made sure that the dose of the whatever the drug was and whatever the blood clot was caused, that couldn't, that might not have happened. Why did God let this happen? Isn't he powerful enough? And of course he is powerful enough. That only makes the question deeper. Why would a powerful God allow this? Well, the first thing is Jesus cares. The second thing is Jesus knows this isn't the end of the story. If we try to make sense of this world just as we see it in a snapshot of suffering, it doesn't make sense. But Jesus has a longer view. He knows it's not the end of the story. And it's not the end of the story for this man Lazarus, because Jesus is about to raise him from the dead quite spectacularly, right? So, I mean, like, literally it's not the end of the story, because in an hour's time, Jesus will go to the tomb, say, take away the stone. And they say, are you sure? Because, you know, it's been quite a long time. It's been 4 days in the Middle Eastern sun, and he's going to be decomposing by now, and no one wants that experience. And so, are you sure, Jesus? And he goes, come on, open it up. He insists. And he calls out, Lazarus, come out. Thank you, Emma, for reading it, by the way, with that heralding voice. And a dead person does. Now, no one is suggesting this is typical. Like, it's not like Christians are scientifically naive. Like, if you go to the mortuary and you try it, it won't happen. And, well, I mean, people will probably advise you get some mental health help as well. I mean, normally you can't do this. But, of course, Jesus isn't any old person. He's the God who made the universe with the power over physics. And as I look up, I see we've got a professor of physics here. So Andy can talk about walking on water. You can't ordinarily walk on water. I mean, medics here. He will tell us you can't ordinarily summon dead people and they get better. But if you made the universe, you can. And what Jesus does now, or here in history, for Lazarus, he is going to do in the end for all of those who trust him. So that there will be a day when he says, Johnny, referring to Laura's husband, come out. And he will. Johnny will come out of the grave. And Laura, come out and insert your name if you trust in Jesus, and you will. Jesus cares, he's bothered by suffering, and he knows, secondly, that it's not the end of the story. But finally, I want to kind of put those two together, because for me this makes a real puzzle, right? If Jesus knows it's not the end of the story, why is he bothered and upset? You see what I mean? So why is Jesus crying, weeping, if he knows in an hour's time or half an hour's time, whenever it was, he's going to raise the guy from the dead? Now, I mean, there's all sorts of answers you could give to that. I mean, you could say Jesus is just compassionate and seeing somebody upset makes him upset. It might be that. And Jesus really is compassionate, for sure. It might be that. But even so, I imagine him saying, oh, you're crying now, but just you wait for this. You know, don't worry, trust me, it's gonna be great. And I can't wait to, why does he enter into the sort of suffering and despair if he knows everything's gonna be fixed? Now, I mean, partly it's about timescales, isn't it? I mean, Laura knows everything's gonna be fixed. But it doesn't mean you're not sad when your husband dies. My friends at this funeral, lots of them were Christian believers, and the woman who died was a Christian believer. They know she's going to be fixed. It doesn't mean they're not sad. So it's partly as a timescale thing, like it's sad now. But it's, even then, it's not a very long timescale, is it, for Jesus? It's just like half an hour. So come on, I mean, why is he so upset? And I only just discovered this a couple of years ago in John's Gospel, and I think it's a really profound thing, because these same words, Jesus began to be greatly troubled in his spirit. The same words crop up in the next chapter of John's Gospel, when Jesus knows he's about to be arrested and crucified. He's contemplating his own death and he's upset. And there's actually quite a close connection between them, because it turns out that Jesus' resurrection of Lazarus, it is the thing that gets him killed. Now, again, you need to take this away and read it to get the whole story. And I've kind of given one plot spoiler, but there's a lot of other twists that I haven't told you, so it's still worth reading. But here's a plot spoiler. Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead is the last straw for his enemies. They've got a kind of weird logic. They think if he can raise people from the dead, people are going to believe in him. Yeah, and we don't want people to believe in him, therefore we should kill him. It's quite a twisted logic. Let's kill the person who can give people life from the dead. Yeah, good idea. To try and enter into it, you've got to understand something about the political situation. It's a very fragile situation at the time. The Roman Empire has soldiers in the streets of Jerusalem, and you know, it's a bit like the Middle East right now. It's all very fragile and very tense. And they think if there's an uprising, if people start following Jesus the Messiah, the Romans will massacre us all. So sort of for political reasons, they think we better keep this quiet. And the last thing we need is Jesus doing spectacular miracles like raising people from the dead. We've got to put a stop to it. Anyway, that's their logic. That's why they want to kill him. But all we need to know now is Jesus knows that raising Lazarus from the dead will bring about his own death. And that troubles him. It scares him. And he does it anyway. So it's what I love about Jesus. It's not just that he's powerful, which he really is. We've been thinking about that all the way through this service. He is the one with power to fix the broken world. He's powerful, but it's not just raw power. It's power combined with the loving willingness to lay down his life in order to do it. There's a price tag for Jesus to fix the world. It's not easy for him to do. It's not cheap for him to do. He has to lay down his life to do it. And he does. And so I think Jesus is crying at this funeral for a different reason, for the reason that we cry at funerals. He's crying thinking, I want to fix this and I love these people, but if I fix it, it's going to cost me. And he's thinking about the death he will die in order to save us from ultimately from death. And then he thinks, okay, let's do this. Briefly, three points. Jesus cares. Knows that it's not the end of the story, and for Lazarus it's pretty quick, for Johnny it'll be a bit longer, for all of us who trust in Jesus on the last day he'll summon us from our graves and we'll come out. But thirdly, because Jesus was willing to pay with his own life in order that he could give us life. And I honestly don't think there's anything like this anywhere else in the world but in Jesus, honestly. Last week, if you were here, we're hearing from a former Buddhist and a former Muslim who are now both put their faith in Jesus. And they shared at the time, and again, it's on YouTube, I think, if you want to follow up with that. They were sharing, you know, what I found in Jesus, I couldn't find in Buddhism or in Islam. You can't find it in atheism. I used to be an atheist. You can't find it there. In fact, you can't find it anywhere. A God cares and is powerful and is going to fix it. It's not the end of the story. And loves the world enough that he's willing to pay the cost in order that he might fix it. It's an amazing story. It's the only one, actually, that offers help when things go wrong. If your life is going fine, maybe you don't think you need it yet. I'd urge you to look at the foundations of your life before things go wrong, because when things go wrong, you will need this. And I urge you to have a look at it now. Christian Explored, Ben's already said, fantastic thing. And I really encourage you to talk to Matt and Arlene. They'll be downstairs and they're running it and they're really nice. So you'll get to meet them. And even as you chat to them, you think, oh, I wouldn't mind hanging out with you. And you watch a video, you have a discussion. It's very low key. So I recommend that to you. Now we're going to take a brief pause and then we're going to pray and then our final song.